Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to inspiring women who make us think differently. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Melanie Eusebi. Hi, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Now, Melanie Eusebi is an entrepreneur, an award-winning business strategist, and an author that knows all about making money and leading in business. She also works with various schools as a mentor and a regular speaker and broadcaster for BBC Television and Radio on BBC News at 6, What the Papers Say, Radio 4's Today programme, and even hosting a show at Colourful Radio. Wow. So, Melanie, wow, you've worked in financial services and you help clients identify strategies for generating revenue and growth in their businesses.
Now, everyone's keen to know more about money. So can you share with us how women particularly can make more money?
What I think right now is that we're making more money than we ever have before. Representation is increasing at the senior levels of our organizations. And so it's not necessarily only about making more money. It's about what do we also do with this wealth once we obtain it. So even though we do have gendered work in our society, so in regards to some of our care service and our cares and our services, women are making more and more money, but then there is, we haven't opened up the playing field. We haven't opened up the conversation around what it means to have more money, what it means to make more money and take home more money and keep that money and make it grow. There's a study that was released 2 years ago by an insurance firm that women most likely die poor and alone. And the reason why is because we outlive our spouses and we also are taking our money and we are caring for the people in our lives, the people that we love. And so what happens is that we join a gang of girlfriends in our older years, but we don't have as much money as our male counterparts. And so those kinds of things we have to really shine a light on. Because that means that even though we are making money and we are attaining heights that we haven't before, on the other hand, there's still a ways to go.
Gosh, that's a depressing thought, isn't it? So how do we make more money now? What do we have to do?
There are several things. Whenever a woman wants to make more money, there is an assessment that has to go on in regards to what you do and the value of what you bring to in your contribution to society. And then on top of that, what you do with the money once you receive it and what your time is worth to you. One of my favorite books, Your Money or Your Life, it asks you to go through the exercise of saying, okay, well, you know, what do you do with your time? And what does when you work for someone, what are you giving up in order to work for that person to get money? And the exercise is so enlightening because it really makes you kind of monetize your time a bit more than the way that we're probably not used to. So there's not what I'm saying is there's not a one quick, this is what you have to do. First of all, it's about getting the mindset and saying my time is valuable and I am inherently valuable. What I do is inherently valuable. Measure it against the marketplace and say, okay, well, you know, what are other people who are doing the same kind of thing with the same kind, varying levels of experience, what are they doing? What are they making as well? And opening up those conversations. And then, quite frankly, you have to think, is it worth it? So when I was working at Boots and I was learning how to face the boxes, you know, because those in stores, you have to kind of learn how to line up the boxes so that it looks really, really nice. Like the display looks really, really lovely. It may not have made me a lot of money, but it was a journey. I was on a journey, on a path, and it was almost important to me. Would I go back and do that now? No, because I've learned that part, but that was part of my journey. And so sometimes that's where apprenticeships come in, internships come in. So you may not be making a lot of money, but it's on the path. It's on the journey. It's the learning that you have to go through. So all of those things, I would say, it's about exploring those kinds of conversations with your squad, with your people, rather than it being something that you're kind of keeping inside or something that you're not really focusing on. Because while we're talking about gender equality, like, you know, men are talking about, you know, how to make money, how to pursue their jobs, how to make their dreams and goals happen and realize their life's ambitions. And so I think that we have to kind of flip the script just a little bit so that we can focus more on that.
So we have to think more like men then?
No, it's not about thinking more like men. I think it's more about thinking more about what the realization of purpose is in your life.
Definitely. And putting value on yourself.
Like, for example, there's a study when I was in Australia with the Women of the World Festival. I did some work with the Commonwealth government and Australian government, and just in regards to the growth of lifestyle businesses. So you'll see that there's a huge rise of entrepreneurship with women, right? Like it's incredible. It's amazing. But it's great because it's so different. It's ours. It's not we're copying men, so we're just, you know, going to be like men. It's more saying, like, you're seeing this growth of lifestyle businesses. And it's not necessarily about, you know, about the life and style. It's more about the fact that women want enough to be comfortable, to take care of themselves, take care of their children, to take care of their homes. They are not trying to merge to other businesses. They're not trying to acquire other businesses. They're not trying to be the best. They're just trying to bring their talents to the market and get paid for it in a way that they can take care of themselves and their family. And it's a beautiful move from a zero-sum game that we've lived in where if one person gets it, that means I don't get it. Women are now moving into this place with their entrepreneurial ventures where they just want to bring their talents to the market and they get paid well for it. And that's it. They come home and take care of their people, their families, themselves. And, you know, they're not trying to build whole dominions anymore.
Definitely, definitely. And putting value on themselves, isn't it? It's actually knowing their worth and knowing that they should ask for more or the money that they're worth or more money and not just sort of sell themselves short, isn't it? Because we're very good at not valuing ourselves enough.
Yeah, we are. And so I'm so good at it. I'm so incredibly good at it, not valuing myself. And so, you know, even though I'm on this soapbox and platform, I had to issue a few quotes over these last few months. And I thank God for my squad. I have 4 people that when I have to price a service that I haven't offered before, there's a variance. There are 4 people that I trust. And I say, hey, this client has come to me and they've asked for this, 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 and this. You know, the key points. What do you think? And then I have one text that I send out to 4 people. And then usually their answers are quite similar. You know, in terms of the variance, it's great.
Brilliant.
But I need it too. I need it too. Like it's like your CV. It's just probably best to get someone else to do it. You need someone else's eyes on it because you're probably going to undervalue yourself.
Step back a bit.
Particularly if we're talking about women.
And know if it's too high. And then people can give you a realistic idea because you can lose something if you go too high that you really want, can't you? So it's actually, that makes a lot of sense. I like that squad.
I was going too low. And my friend, she was just like, you need to put your big girl panties on.
I like that. That's so true. My goodness, you should be going high, girl. Look at your lineup here. So I first heard about you when you were setting up a webinar for aspiring business leaders to teach about finance. And some of our listeners actually asked us about having a guest on our show who could help them generate more money in business. So you're helping them think differently. I thought you'd be perfect for that.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. You know, through the Black British Business Awards and through the Women of the World Festival, both of those things at the heart are about economic empowerment for me. And so it's this weird amorphous place that it's not necessarily about learning about how to save financial instruments. It's this weird place about bringing ourselves to our money and our value. And what I mean by that is I'm not trying to teach you the kind of old financial models. There are so many people that are out there. But the thing is, I'll give an example. So I had a budget party. So what's a budget party, you say? So I have these budget parties where I think now the waiting list is 150 people, but it was about 50 women in this kind of workshop space that I had gotten, and tables of 4 to 6 people and 2 accountants at the front, 2 really, really lovely, lovely accountants that like answer questions and they're really open and no one is trying to sell you anything here. They're not trying to sell their services. There was music and there was wine and there was canapes. And we went through setting up a monthly budget. I just a line by line by line. And you'd be working in teams of 4 or 5, you know, and you'd have your laptops. And the only thing that it was a small fee just to cover costs, like £20. but it was you had to bring your laptop and you had to have access to your online banking so that you'd be able to create a cash flow budget for the rest of the year. And the tears, like even thinking about it now, it's just that when do people do that?
Yep. You're so right. Yep. You never learn that, do we?
Unless your mom or your dad teach you. And, you know, my mom was brilliant with money. She's more of the work really hard, save really hard, don't do anything kind of mentality, which is not really. I was like, but it was just to see some of the, like, so, and some women just felt so, I think about it now, there were so many tears around that room. And then we also had hot seats. So there's a hot seat in regards to really being authentic and being able to say, this is where I messed up. Like, you know, there is so many of us where I know I'm making more money than both my parents combined at my age.
Good for you.
And where is that? No, but where is that? Yeah. Where is that wealth compared to, for what they've done for in terms of the immigration from the Caribbean to the UK and having me and buying a home? Do you know, like, where I'm not, why is it that a lot of our, particularly millennials, like, why am I not there? Why am I not greater than that? Because I stood on their shoulders. And it was tough. It was tough to kind of go through some of the hot seat experiences, because people are really, I love it when women get together, because, you know, you just get a big hug around the room and there's so much shame associated with money and not knowing about it. So all of a sudden when you walk into a room and there are 75 people and they're all putting up their hand and saying, we don't know enough, we want to know more, we know we should know more, but we don't,
yep.
Then it's great. And then, you know, and then my accountant's there so that he can just answer the questions, you know, just able to say, okay, well, what's this and what's that? And, you know, like sometimes it's, why does year end here? Why do we have to do this in April versus November? And just like simple.
Yep, makes sense.
You know, and then you can ask each other. And there's a lot of laughs and there's music and there's wine and canapes.
It sounds fabulous. Everyone should do it. And it sounds like there's lots of positive energy in the room and everyone comes out richer in every way.
So I did that the first time. And then they were just like, well, how are we going to keep track? And I was like, well, y'all didn't pay me for that. Like, I can't be keeping track of your budgets. What's wrong with you? That's what it's about. They're like, no, we need accountability group. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's exactly what we need.
So do a budget and that helps you focus on your priorities in your life and where you're losing money and where you need to make money.
This is exactly what happens, right? So all of a sudden it goes into goals.
Yep.
So then we had to have one on savings,
yep.
Right? Because people are just like, oh, I want to buy a house. And you're like, okay, well, what do you need to buy a house? That means that you know, you have to have this kind of deposit, blah, 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 blah. Yep. You know, you have to have this kind of credit. So it just, it started to go, it's that mentality of that core kind of valuing that chunk. Then all of a sudden it leads to other things. So then we had to have a savings and goals session where we had me coaching how to create goals and then to break it down fiscally. So say, for example, you say for every goal that you have, I wanted women to monetize it. So, and what I mean by that is if you're saying that you want to lose weight and you want to exercise every day, so can you exercise in your garden every day? Will you? So in order to maybe throw some money at it to make it really successful, maybe you want a personal trainer, or maybe you want to join a gym, maybe you want to join a class that you really like. And all of a sudden you have to monetize your goals, even though it's not a financial goal necessarily, but usually your goals are attached with money, starting your own business. Maybe that, you know, getting that nest egg so that you can take a leap and leave your 9-to-5. Or maybe it's about, it could be about anything, like saving for your children, education, going back to school, whatever, a book, writing a book. But all of those actually have a monetary value that we don't explore. And so that's why it's savings and money together and goals, because then you are forced to kind of say, wait a minute, what am I doing now? And every time I buy that Zara blouse, is it worth it? Because it's taken away from my freedom fund.
That makes so much sense. And you'll be helping so many other women out there, because it's spending the time and the priority on money that makes money. And men do it all the time. You're right. We need to do more of that.
And talking about it, and I love it. I love the buzz. Like, I love that I love it. When you start to talk about it, the shame goes away.
Exactly.
Like, oh, girl, like, I don't have a meter. Like, there was a whole Thames water meter conversation that it got really heated and fiery. And I was like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And these people, one woman realized she was paying, you know, £450 and her colleague down the way, after installing a meter, was paying £202. And, you know, she was a single woman in a small flat in the same kind of neighborhood. And she was like, no, this is ridiculous. You know, and even that, I think that we're not connecting in those same kind of ways. Yeah. You know, like that community, sit around the kitchen table, share stuff. That's what I, so.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's inspired us. So getting comfortable with money, talking about it and understanding it and getting the best return on investment, really, isn't it? Brilliant. I'm going to get a freedom fund myself. So you've talked about economic empowerment, about value. I mean, do you think it's, again, linked back to a bit of imposter syndrome? That
did you know that I just published a video on this morning?
No, I did not. Oh my goodness, that's really weird.
This morning is on imposter syndrome.
Did you really?
I literally just published it today. You'll see it. It's like,
that's fantastic. We are so connected on this money wavelength. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, because the imposter, women feel like we're an imposter by asking for more or saying, you know, let's have 3, 4, 5 jobs and having more. But we shouldn't feel like that, should we? What did your video say?
Oh, it was saying that imposter syndrome, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. And imposter syndrome, we all suffer from it. So number one, realize that everyone suffers from it. Oprah suffered from it.
Did she?
Jennifer Lopez suffered from it. Yeah, Oprah suffers from it. She's like, there are so many times that she walks into the room, even now, that am I supposed to be here? Where Jennifer Lopez, she suffered from it when she won a Grammy after 70 million in album sales. And the thing is, what imposter syndrome is actually inherently personal. It's a sign of you being somewhere that you weren't before. And it's a sign of growth.
Yes. Oh, and growth and change is good, isn't it? Yep.
It's inherently personal. It's inherently, I have not been here before, and now I am.
Yes.
I am where I, and that's it. It's not actually a comparative point at all, feeling that way. And that means that, you know, so soon, yes, you're going to find that other people are, it's because they've been there for a long time.
Yep. So it's not a self-esteem issue. It's really I'm not in my comfort zone because this is new to me. I'm not quite sure how to deal with it thing.
And then a year, and then 2 seconds down, you do this 2 or 3 times, and then all of a sudden you're in your comfort zone.
Yes. So, and growth and change is good. And that's what we need to tell everyone. So in 2014, you launched and became the chair of the Black British Business Awards, the largest awards program of its kind, endorsed by the Prime Minister, the Mayor of London, and numerous business leaders. How did you create that then?
I went to the Every Woman Awards, and I love them. I'd been there for about 7 years at that point, and I always cried with the entrepreneurs and the winners, and I was so excited. And Mom was a big awards person as well, I realized. So I just thought, wow, this would be great if we had this for Black people. And then the Every Woman founders, who were my friends, or who are still my friends, they said, well, why don't you do it? And I was like, well, I don't know how to start an awards program. They're like, well, we do. Why don't we do it together?
Did you text 4 people?
No, I didn't text 4 people because I had my... They were my crew, right? So Max and Karen, the co-founders of Every Woman, are the co-founders of the Black British Business Awards. And then they introduced me to Sophie, who became the 4th co-founder. So all of a sudden, we came 4. And I thought it was just so... The combination for success was, you know, in that group of people. And what I meant by that is Sophie is a corporate lawyer and an executive director at Morgan Stanley. But at the time, she was at Virgin. And then, so there's a little bit of a combination there. So because all of a sudden you get Richard Branson, who is approving your stuff and tweeting about it, you know.
Lovely.
And so that just, and then we have the combination of Sophie being from Zimbabwe, from myself being Caribbean background, and also 2 white women. And I think that whether we like it or not, there's a gross problem around intersectionality in the gender movement. And for us as kind of not just Afro-Caribbean, but African and Caribbean, and then also 2 white women, for us to be the 4 founders, then it just accelerated our growth past anything else, past anyone else, really.
Fantastic.
There are not, even gender awards programs don't have the amount of press and coverage that we do.
Yeah.
It's the power of collaboration, of taking the knowledge that we had from gender and applying it to race. Additionally, taking four people who are, you know, me being arts and media focused, as well as, and then Sophie in financial services and professional services, and Karen and Max with their experience of just having done this successfully with gender, it was just, it was ours. And we ran an election, there was an election year as well. So, you know, that's really, you know, I'm not saying David Cameron did it for that reason. I'm just saying it's a lot easier to get in people's ears.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. No, but and it's such a strong, you know, important topic that good for you. There you are. You definitely shouldn't have imposter syndrome. Your value's tripled on this podcast. So your mission was to uncover role models, and you talked about Oprah, and inspire a new generation of leaders. And as you say, you co-founded it with international corporate finance lawyer Sophie Chandarkar. Now, you were also the executive producer for the amazing Women of the World Festival, the Wow Fest, with Jude Kelly, who has been on our podcast on our birthday anniversary, because we launched it at the Wow Fest 2 years ago.
Yeah, she's lovely. Working for Jude is, that's all I have to say about that. That was, she is one of the most amazing women that I've ever had the fortune to be around.
Oh, that's a nice accolade. Yeah. It's certainly, you know, incredibly bright, incredibly talented, and, you know, lovely to hear her story and indeed yours. Now, the WowFest, talking about the Global Gender Equality Festival occurring with over 2 million women in 50 cities over five continents. And I think that's even higher now, isn't it? What an amazing success story that is.
Yeah, it is. I didn't know what to do. Because I remember I was financial services girl, right? And so I came back and I'd come out and I do this awards program. The South Bank Center is an arts institution. Jude Kelly is an arts, you know, like, dawn in regards to just not her career. You know, yes, fine, she's doing just well now, but executive director pushing South Bank Center to executive director, but artistic director of pushing South Bank out. And then on top of that, you know, at the West Yorkshire Playhouse. And so it was that transition. It made the transition complete, moving to an arts organization, but then also in a space of gender where I loved so much. And then also because I was allowed to explore kind of freely this whole, my whole concept around economic empowerment, because I was always about, look, you know, it's great and everything that there's legislation, it's great and everything that, you know, we're saying that this is the right things, but until women are paid equally, we know there's still a problem. Until we don't have gendered work, then it's still a problem. Like it is actually down, unfortunately, where we are right now, to the money. And when I say gendered work, I mean gendered work all the way down to, you know, taking care of your child, right, you know, after it's born, like that even that concept, like to the start of our existence. And so I think for me, I've been extremely fortunate in building that flexibility in the Freedom Fund to be able to explore and work with things and work in industries and work for people that I thoroughly respect and I love. This new, I'm slightly pivoting away from the big events, and I love the big events, and I will always have big events in my heart, because I think that bringing people together is it's like a symphony orchestra when it plays beautifully. But I don't necessarily want to do coaching, but I do know that change starts one person at a time. And so that's why I want to go right back down to individual economic empowerment.
One-on-one.
Sure people have not necessarily one-on-one. I want, it's like the practical application. So, you know, I there's power in us going to see, you know, listening to Michelle Obama on our stages, you know, of course we get motivated, but then what do you do when you get home?
That was the highest followed, you know, and she came back and just the biggest sellout ever, wasn't it, as in an auditorium?
Yeah, yeah.
What does that tell us then, that we're just wanting to know more about her amazing life and just learn how to change our own, really?
Yes. I don't know what it tells us in regards to, I think there's a lot of stuff that it tells us that I won't say. I think the mere fact that she had to come back is really telling. I think it's an indictment.
In a bigger venue.
Yeah, I think it's an indictment. Yeah. Because, you know, yeah, it was an indictment against us as a country. as a society. And it's a shame because anyone with a brain would have known that Michelle Obama coming here would have been a sellout event, a must-see ticket. And so I was quite disappointed by that. A lot of people felt excluded. On the other hand, I think that it's also an indictment because we have so much traction with U.S. women, U.S. Black women. When Michelle was here, Oprah, Ava DuVernay, these are some amazing, Angela Davis, Chimamanda, but they're not from the UK. And I think that's an indictment as well. So I think that there's a lot of celebration to be had, and you know, we can get caught up. But as a woman, I get caught up and happy. But as a Black person, as a Black woman, then I'm like, guys, we got to fix up. There's something wrong here. We import our Black people. We import the Black people that we put on stage. And that's inherently why, unfortunately, the awards are needed, because all of our actors were saying, hey, you know what? You don't like me when I'm here, but you like me when I go off to the States and star in something like The Wire, and then I come back and then I can command top dollar on our stages. That's the path, the Lenny Henry path that he describes so much. And so I think there's just so much going on right now that even though, yes, we can get caught up in the celebration and the amazingness of these women, there is a real disconnect in regards to our acknowledgement of LGBTQI, and disabled people as well. I think that we're in danger of leaving people behind, and it breaks my heart.
So celebrate everyone, and everyone from the UK.
Yeah, there's so much. I just closed nominations, and you know, today I have to go to Farnborough. You know, I know it's only like Surrey, but I was going to Farnborough, and then last week I was in Manchester, and the next week I'm in Wales. And,
oh my goodness!
I know I'm Canadian. Canadian British, and I was born here, but I just think that we got to work at bringing our country together.
Definitely. So let me just ask you as well. You are also a writer and have written for publications such as the Huffington Post, Management Today. Is that right? And are on the board of the Creative Industries and a professor at the Holt International Business School in London. So philosophy and ethics are the way to go.
That's
why you think differently, isn't it? What can we learn more about business and philosophy then?
Oh, philosophy and business, actually the link is so, it's getting stronger and stronger.
So can I just ask you, which strong women or men have inspired you?
Inspired me. I love some of the most inspiring words that I've written are by Brené Brown, in terms of vulnerability and shame. I love her.
Wow.
Her strength in being vulnerable, daring greatly. And also she has a special on Netflix right now that just released, The Courage. Yeah, it's brilliant, but it's around vulnerability and shame, and it gave me strength. Her words gave me strength. Just the, you know, again, finding your own way of being you and not having to put on some sort of farce of being perfect or being absolutely strong all the time and knowing everything. And now I feel like I'm free.
I like your freedom. Yeah, your freedom and your freedom fund. They're all excellent.
So yes, hers. So, because I think it was a translation of leadership as we knew it. So, you know, we were just following this trope, and she opened it up for me. And that's why I love listening to her. And I think that she's done it for so many people. Meeting Oprah, that was brilliant.
You've met her. You met her. Oh my goodness, that's my ultimate goal.
She's like, where is it?
I love how you just slipped that into the conversation there. she's a goddess.
Marie Forleo, I love her. I love the way that she's just empowered so many women to start their own businesses. She's so strong and she's so great. She's so full of grace and love and empathy. She's a model for me as well.
Wow, those are some cool women. Now, can we talk about...
they're cool.
Can we talk about where your passions are? What are your hobbies and how do you relax or spend your time off? Reading, by the looks of it.
Yes, I do. I read a lot. And like the shelves that are down here, they're all full of books. I take 4 baths every day.
What's that then?
I go for a walk. I go for a walk in the park every day. And that's because I have a dog. But I also plan my life that way. So I know I have to, so I do a lot of my phone calls, my meetings while I'm walking in an urban park.
Oh, wow.
I plan it. I love urban parks. They're my favorite. So I live right near a big common, and like right near, I planned that.
I don't blame you. Yes. For, again, walk. Freedom. Freedom again. That's the
strength training. Spaces.
And do you have a mantra for living your life then?
Yes. It's progress, not perfection. And don't measure your now with someone's future, you know? And because that's what we do. We look at Steve Jobs and we're like, oh, he's so successful. I'm like, dude, he got kicked out of his own company. You know, let's remember it's a path, it's a journey, and what you taking your first step. Okay. And the monthly quote is, always stay gracious. Best revenge is your paper. Now, for those of you who know Beyonce, you will know that that is a quote from one of her songs.
Oh, really?
Always stay gracious. Best revenge is your paper. So when people come for her, come at her, you'll never see Beyonce react, ever.
Really?
All she does is just invest. And she says, best revenge is your paper. Best revenge is you getting rich and getting famous and fabulous. And so it's the last line from her song, Formation. But she just recently launched a documentary on Netflix, the making of one of her shows, her Coachella show. And that woman works so hard. It is like, whether you like her or not, the opinion across the board is she works so hard. It was so inspiring to see it. And that's what she says. It's that, you know what, just stay gracious and best revenge is your paper. That's it. But it's an actual quote from one of her songs. And so it's good to remind me, because sometimes when, you know, you get people who don't understand what you're trying to do, they don't like what you're trying to do, they kind of throw shade on you. Then I just have to remember, I was like, you know what, just keep it moving, Mel. Keep it moving past that. It's cool.
Who's been the greatest influence of your life then?
I could not name one. Those three women that I mentioned, Marie Forleo and Oprah and Brené Brown, they changed my world. There was a Rachel Held Evans. There was a quote. So she is a Christian woman from Texas, and she just passed away this weekend. And her books really helped me bring my faith into the new world, into the century, I always say, like, in regards to inclusion of my LGBTQI friends, inclusion of my feminism and my femininity as well. And so she's a modern kind of Christian, but she has some of her quotes are just amazing. And so I always have them. I have like quotes all the time. Like she was amazing, but she just died actually on May 4th. And I didn't realize how much I'm going to miss her until I found out that she passed away. So yeah, if I could only touch people the way that she has touched people, it's amazing.
Oh, bless you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But you know what? But I didn't know her. I only met her once, but she's, I think we have an opportunity to just touch people. With every interaction, every engagement, it's a blessing. It's a chance, a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I don't want it to ever get dull. I don't want ever to desensitize my interaction with people. That's why I'm so sensitive about when I schedule interviews or just like a no transaction should you ever feel like I'm not listening to you, Nikki, like I'm looking at you.
Oh, I'm feeling it, feeling the love, the energy. So what's your next goal then, Melanie?
Oh my gosh, you're hilarious. Like, you have all my signs.
Oh, look, yeah, it's almost like we rehearsed this prop earlier.
You're on you guys are listening to the podcast. So what it's like she's looking at my house and like pointing out things and then saying, let's ask her a question about
she's
this.
She's got a great handbag over there, I think, as well.
So I bought these frames.
Oh, wow.
So you can see. May 2019
shout out
goals.
For Laura Ashley. They need to be sponsoring us. May 2019 goals. That is incredible. What is on there? There's a whole typed up list here.
Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't take very long. You guys know you could just dash your goals on a piece of paper. And I put them in my little Laura Ashley frame with my quote of the month as well.
Wow. What are they? Well, there's loads special. Of them on there.
I do have, I just launched a YouTube channel. And so that is just to get it to 100 subscribers, I'd be really happy. You have to write these things down. And you put it somewhere really obnoxious. So it's opposite my sofa. So that means every time I sit down and I was watching Game of Thrones, in the back of my head, I was like, really, Mel? Is this the best use of your time? When you have all these...
And then you look at your goals. Wow, that's amazing. So everyone needs to do that. So put them in a frame somewhere important.
Yeah, cherish it.
And cherish it. Thank you so much, Melanie Eusebi, for being one very influential woman who has inspired me and will have inspired multiple women and men and motivated all of their lives. You've been fabulous today. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for your wisdom and your philosophy and your ethics and your amazing planning our life on money and in frames. We look forward to doing that. Thank you so much.